This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. It was 35 years ago today that this song was number one.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey
Hey Jude was another first for the Beatles. At 7 minutes and 11 seconds, it was the longest number one single ever. It was also the first record on their label, Apple Records. Years later, the company is still in the news. This week, Apple Records announced a new version of the Beatles' album, Let It Be, will be released in November. It will be closer to what the Beatles had intended, moving away from the production techniques the group had pioneered, overdubs of strings and choirs, and getting back to their rock and roll roots. A new book by Bruce Spizer documents Apple Records' shaky history in great detail. It includes discographies, details from recording sessions, and a nice narrative about the label, which began as more than just a creative outlet.
Well, the reason for forming Apple really wasn't the utopian reasons we were led to believe. It was formed as a tax shelter. The idea was that they wanted to form a company that they could put their income in, and then therefore they would have all these corporate expenses they could deduct against it. One of the things they didn't realize when they were talking about corporate expenses was how big those expenses would get to be.
I think a lot of people might naturally assume that they did this because they were looking for more creative autonomy.
Right. Well, part of the idea behind Apple, once it got going, was they did want to develop new talent. And they actually were quite good at it initially. They brought in Mary Hopkin. They brought in James Taylor. But as time went on, they realized it was more hassle than it was, you know, worth the effort.
James Taylor. A very young James Taylor.
Very young James Taylor, singer-songwriter out of New York. Peter Asher worked the production with him, and he did one very good album on Apple. And then when things started fizzling out with Apple, Peter Asher asked Apple if they would release James Taylor from his contract, which Apple did. And then, of course, he went on to become a superstar.
The first single that they had under the Apple label was Hey Jude, backed by Revolution. It's a pretty good start.
It's an excellent start. I don't think any record company ever started out the box with a 5 million seller like that. And the story behind Hey Jude was interesting because it was written by Paul. And while he knew it was a good song, he was wondering whether disc jockeys would be willing to play a 7 minute song. So he had Ken Mansfield, who was the actual manager for Apple in the United States, bring an acetate of Hey Jude to a few radio stations to see if these program directors would like the song, and of course everyone liked it.
Some of the records produced under the Apple label were quite successful, some were not. What was the track record?
Well, the track record initially was phenomenal. They released four singles, and the first two were big hits. So the other one besides Hey Jude was Those Were the Days by Mary Hopkin, which was number one in many parts of the world. The only reason it wasn't number one in America was it couldn't get past Hey Jude, which dominated the charts for over 2 months. But they also released a really wonderful song called Sour Milk Sea by Jackie Lomax that was a great song, but didn't do anything inexplicably. And it was kind of like that. They had some success with a group called Badfinger. They released some songs by Billy Preston, a wonderful song, That's the Way God Planned It, but once again, it didn't do anything. James Taylor really didn't do anything. So I think the Beatles had felt that because we're the Beatles, anything on our label is going to sell, but it didn't work that way. Radio programmers didn't jump on something strictly because it was on Apple.
How were they as businessmen?
The Beatles weren't businessmen, and John realized that more than anybody. I think Paul initially tried to play businessman and kind of enjoyed it. When they launched Apple on The Tonight Show and they were talking about it, he said, that, you know, we're going to have to sort of play businessmen for a while. And the reason they had to was because of the death of Brian Epstein. They really didn't want to play businessmen, and they were terrible at it.
Well, one example of that is the Apple Store.
Oh, yeah, the Apple Store was, the idea was they wanted to do something in retail. And so this group of three Dutch people and an Englishman who collectively called themselves The Fool decided that they would be the perfect ones to stock the store with clothes that they designed. And, of course, they had incredible expense accounts that the Beatles willingly paid for. And although the clothes may have been pretty, they tended to fall apart rather quickly. As far as the running of the store itself, the employees there realized that there were no internal controls, so they would help themselves to money out the cash register. Customers would come in, they would browse, they would look at all the beautiful people, they would look at the beautiful merchandise, and they would leave with it without paying for it often. So it was losing, I guess, approaching about $500,000 loss in 6 months. And that's when John said, this is ridiculous, we have to put a stop to it. So what they did was one evening, the Beatles and their friends went into the store and took all the really good stuff out. And then the next day, the store opened up, and they basically told people who walked in, everything's free. And so people went in. It was kind of, I guess, best described as a legal orgy of shoplifting for one day, till the store was completely wiped out.
They surrounded themselves with some very colorful characters. Who was Magic Alex?
Magic Alex was a Greek TV repairman that somehow conned John Lennon into thinking that he was an electronical genius. And he had some great ideas, and some of them actually made sense. One of his ideas was, which is now used as voice recognition technology, where you would walk into a room and say, call Brian, and automatically a telephone would call Brian for you. He also developed a wallpaper that could act as speakers. Other ideas he supposedly had was when you went into the recording studio, you didn't have to put musicians around separate walls. It would be this force field so that the drummer's drums wouldn't bleed over to the other mics. It would be this invisible force field. He supposedly also was going to come up with a force field that would cause a house to hover over the ground. Of course, these things never happened, and although Magic Alex did set up 8 different patents for Apple, none of them were ever developed.
What's the state of Apple Records now?
Apple Records kind of went into oblivion in the mid-70s. When the contract between the Beatles and EMI expired, Apple was there but wasn't doing much of anything. And then all of a sudden in the 1990s, they had a triumphant return. The first of this was the album Live at the BBC, which took BBC songs that had been recorded by the Beatles in the studios for BBC shows as early as 1962 through 1965. And Apple released the album, it sold in the millions, and all of a sudden Apple was back in business. They then worked on the anthology project, and those did extremely well. Then they came out with an album called Yellow Submarine Songtrack, and then I guess it was about 2 years ago, they came out with Beatles One, which was a phenomenal, you know, worldwide, approaching now almost 30 million in sales, which was essentially a very simplistic greatest hits collection.
And what about the documentary?
The actual film, Let It Be, eventually will be out on DVD. The big question is, how many extras will they give you? Because what I would like to see them do is have it exactly as it was, and then have a bonus DVD or two with a lot of the outtakes, because one of the things about those sessions, sure, there were some tense moments, and the film captures them, but there also were a lot of fun freewheeling moments where the Beatles would break into a bunch of fun oldies, songs like You Really Got a Hold on Me, even old tunes of theirs like Love Me Do, just to show the fun that they actually did have during those sessions, and it wasn't all sheer hell for them.
All right, well, we've certainly had a lot of fun today. Bruce, thank you for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Enjoyed it.
Bruce Spicer is the author of The Beatles on Apple Records. You can hear tapes from the Beatles' Let It Be sessions, including unreleased Beatles performances on All Songs Considered at npr.org. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.